Well, thank you, first of all, for having me here with you today. Thank you to Ruth and Max for your music. Thank you to my friend Valerie, who I wouldn't be here without her. Thank you to Abby and all who participated in creating our sacred circle. I step into this sacred circle, the circle of the feminine that beckons me, this circle of ancient wisdom that sings to me. And I do not step into this circle alone. I step into it with all of those women in history who have stepped here before me, finding their voice and their power. I step into the circle with all of the women who've accompanied me on my journey, who've been willing to cry with me, to heal with me, to learn with me, to explore with me, to heal some more with me. And I step into this journey, this circle with, see these books? This is just such a small amount of women's voices. Over the years, these voices have instructed me. They have encouraged me. They have corrected me. They have directed me. And mostly, these voices make me feel I am not alone. So I add my stone to the circle. So who am I? You can define me by what I've done in the past, the jobs I've held, but mostly I'd like you to define me as a seeker. I never stop. What drives me is not this power to succeed or advance or be noticed. I'm not aiming for some higher position. What drives me, I've come to know, is mystery. It is that sacred place deep inside. It's womb-like. Yep, I just said womb here. It's womb-like. It is where things can grow and come into being. This is what I want to uncover in me, in you. What is it? The mysteries of being human together. Bring it into the light. So today I'm here. You're starting a series about honoring the feminine wisdom. So I'm going to try to help us set the stage for that, to what it means to honor feminine wisdom. So the first question you might ask is, well, why are we honoring feminine wisdom? Why not a little of the other kinds of wisdom? Because there's so many kinds. And I say, well, why not? Why not explore the feminine? It's really no different than if I were to approach you and say, let's together think about the issues of migrants and migrant workers. I'm not a migrant or a migrant worker, but I'm so interested in their stories, their experiences, how what's happening in the world impacts them. That's all we're doing when we explore feminine wisdom. We're just saying, whoo, look at this fertile ground to explore and learn from one another. It's not exclusionary, it's just focused. You see the difference, right? We're not excluding anyone looking at feminine wisdom. We're just going to focus. So, makes me nervous because of all the kind of baggage we can bring around what it means to be feminine and explore it. So there's things we have to learn and unlearn. There's ways we can begin to think about feminine wisdom, feel about it, and then embody it, these three sacred centers of ours that we get to explore. So that's what we'll try to do today. So are you with me as we start? Everybody here? All right, here we go. First, we're going to try to learn a little in our heads, where we're usually most comfortable starting, about what is feminine wisdom. So it's built on this understanding that certainly there's male and female in life, gender identity, but there's also masculine and feminine energies that run in everyone. So you and I both have some of each, and sometimes more of one leads the way than another. But it's this understanding that it's an energy or a wisdom that runs in all of us. This Carl Jung would be a great example of someone who's more contemporary, who really built on this idea that we all have masculine and feminine energies. He called it the anima and the animus. And he said that all of us have to work to balance those two, that when one gets out of balance, everything is out of balance. So understanding that we all hold both energies in us. And in fact, the very first shamanic, I'm trained in indigenous practices of shamans, the very first shamanic experience I ever had was I chose a woman teacher and I went to Sedona and she met me there. But all of it, I thought I'd be flying off with birds or something in my imagination. But all of the 5 days we had together was about balancing the anima and the animus. She just kept coming back to it, because until we heal those places that are damaged, either from being a woman or from being a man or from roles that were assigned to us or from the imbalance of leaning one way or another, until that was healed and balanced, you really couldn't step on that path to move forward as learning shamanic practices. So it's everywhere in our understanding that both are there. Both are there. That's important to remember. Now, for many of us, this becomes a problem because of Eve. Have you heard of Eve? I know you have. Even if you're not raised in a Christian or a Jewish tradition, Eve is your mother. It just has happened in our culture. So there's this, you know, creation myth of Adam and Eve, and we're going to deconstruct it just a little bit. But it's important to know as we deconstruct it that there's another history behind that story. There are other creation myths where the male and female were not so divided. In fact, if you were to go into the history before the church, before Jesus, there is the understanding that the feminine was often worshipped as divine. If you were to go to Crete and see what statues have been unearthed, you know, there's these beautiful statues of women with their arms up holding snakes, because it was believed that the snakes had wisdom. They had a knowing of how you shed your skin, a knowing of how you feel the tremors of the earth and move with them. There's this powerful knowing. And somewhere over centuries, all of that began to be overrun by another way of thinking. So as these kind of statuaries are unearthed, people say, well, what does that mean? So just think about a woman holding two snakes as we explore Eve. So, in that ancient creation myth, first we learn that Adam, poor Adam, he was all by himself and he got a little lonely. That's what we read. It just was kind of hard on him being in Eden it was just too much. So God gave him a helpmate, is what the Bible says. And the helpmate was pulled from his rib, right? So, oh my goodness, Eve owes Adam her life because it's his rib. Oh, it's on this side, his rib that came out. So that's the first interesting thing to me, is that we're beholden to Adam. Poor Adam. He was all by himself. Poor guy. So he gets a companion. Woman is there. But then there's this tree in the garden where they're living. And it's a tree that has apparently apples on it. And it's not just an apple tree. It's the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Can you get your head around that? It's a tree of the knowledge of good and evil. So if you eat the fruit, you're going to know something you don't know now about good and evil. So a snake comes and says to Eve, eat the fruit. Go ahead. And Eve, who somewhere in her mind knows that snakes have some wisdom, takes the fruit and eats it. And then she does get some wisdom. She does. She sees things for what they are. And she says, Adam, you got to eat the fruit. And Adam eats the fruit. And then they both know things they didn't know before. But then what happens? God is not very happy. God then says to Adam and Eve, you're out of the garden. Sorry, out of the garden. And Adam's like, what? We just got here. And he's very sad. And Eve is very puzzled. And then God, in fact, punishes them and says to Eve, as a result of this, you're going to have so much pain in childbearing. Your days are going to be painful and, yeah, you're going to struggle. And to Adam, God says, you get to have dominion over everything. Because it's Eve who tempted you. So you're going to have dominion over her. And, by the way, over the earth, the animals, you get dominion over everything. Whoa. That's a story, right? It's a story. And you know it's in your DNA somewhere, because you can feel it. Like, it's just not, it's a story that has shaped us all, because we have these understandings of our place, of what is our right, and we've carried it. That's centuries of carrying that. Make no mistake about it, we are shaped by it. And also, and that's called our collective unconscious from Jung, right? Everybody knows that story and how it impacts us. But also in this collective unconscious is memories that especially women have, but men do too, these memories of what happens when you do eat the apple, speak your truth, know your knowledge. What happens when you do that? You could be stoned. You could be burned at the stake. You could be outcast. We all have this collective unconscious of terrible things that can happen to us if we live in our truth. And men hold it too, that this is how we can use power, because it's not hard to misuse power. We have seen it recently. And so we all hold this collective unconscious. So if we're going to talk about feminine wisdom, we have to break that stuff apart. We have to examine how it's impacted us. And to me, there's no judgment in that. I mean, I grew up thinking, I'm never going to be like my mother. I couldn't do it. I wasn't going to sweep the floor twice a day. I was not going to cook every meal. I was just like, burr, 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 burr. You know, I can go on and on. But that's not my job. My job is to listen to my wisdom and to have super compassion for my mother, who did not have the choices, who lived with that collective unconscious filtering down. So that's all I want us to do, is to be in it, break it apart, keep thinking, right? That's all we can do. So I want to tell you a little about my own story. Not that it's such an important story, but I think women's stories are important if we look at feminine wisdom. Because I decided to go to seminary. And this was at a point when, in my denomination, women had only been able to be ordained for 2 years. So I went to seminary and decided I would get a master's degree in divinity. Isn't that a funny title? I'm the master of divinity. But that's what I decided to do. And I had never met a woman minister. I had never heard a woman minister. I had no idea what one was, but somehow I thought, I can do this. It might be possible. So I started seminary with just one small goal. I would dismantle patriarchy. What? So the first thing I met was some resistance. But let me tell you, first of all, that resistance was my own. Little did I know that I was going to need to shed this desire to please and win approval from men. I was a master at moving in that world. So what did it mean for me to dismantle and live into my feminine energy was to understand that I could no longer diminish my strength so that I wasn't so threatening. Wow. So meeting my own resistance. And then I got the chance to meet the resistance that was external. Because in my denomination, women really weren't accepted in this role. So as part of our seminary training, you had to practice speaking and preaching at different churches. And it was a requirement. You had so many to meet. And there were so few churches that would let women speak. So my first experience, I had to drive 3 hours north to a tiny little church somewhere in northern Michigan, so that I could have an experience of practicing preaching. And I was nervous. I'm like, ooh, how do you be the voice of the divine? What does this mean? And I was so busy doing my exegetical work and getting it all perfect, you know, working with the Hebrew and thinking I was all that. So I show up at this little church after my three-hour drive. And I'm met in the parking lot by a deacon. And he's got this little twinkle in his eye. And I think, oh, that's so nice. And he greets me and he says, I'm just so happy you're here. And then he says, because, you know, this is going to be fun. We haven't told anyone that it's a woman coming to speak this morning. Twinkle in his eye. And all of a sudden, like, my bottom of my stomach drops out because I'm like, I thought I was just coming to talk for God, but apparently I'm talking for all women, whoever want to be minister, and it just, it was difficult. So part of the task is you have to hand out little evaluation forms to the congregation because you're a student, so they get to, you know, evaluate you, and then you collect it all back and take it to your preaching professor, and they go through it together. So I got through the sermon. I'm a good speaker. That part's not a problem. And then the evaluation slips came back in. I just want to share a couple of them with you. And understand, I'm taking my job very seriously, right? So here's the first evaluation. Her earrings were too dangly. Okay. She had good delivery. I just don't think women should be ministers. Well, she did fine for a woman. I didn't care for her shoes. So, honest truth, I did not know what to make of those comments. I decided to wear different shoes, but I couldn't change this
or this.
And I didn't want to, right? This is me. You see, religion is really made for the masculine, right? It takes this external truth, if you can imagine me holding some weighty scripture, it takes this external truth and it puts it in your lap. And religion tends to be masculine with its tall steeples and its pulpits that you mount. But spirituality is for the feminine. And I'm not saying females. You're hearing the difference, I hope. It's for the feminine, because spirituality is this going within. It is the womb of creativity. It is all of these mysteries that are waiting to be explored and uncovered. And of course, there are lots and lots of stories of resistances I met, but still, I kept going. Because I believed that if the church could experience a woman in leadership who could live out of her feminine, if the church could experience that, it would change the church. I believed it until I didn't. Until I was asked to leave the church I loved because I was insubordinate. I thought I was being strong and clear and creative and cooperative, but apparently that's what insubordination looks like in a patriarchal system. Broke my heart, broke my life. I'm okay, because look where I am now. You know, I used to be really afraid to use the F word, feminist, because it carries such heavy baggage. Oh my goodness. You used to say if you were a feminist, you must hate men, you must think you're better than men, you're never satisfied, are you? You're angry all the time. Oh my goodness, do we need to put that aside? My mentor, Miriam Therese Winter, taught me that feminist is simply someone seeking the full liberation of all people. That's a feminist. That is feminine wisdom. So here we are, the beginning of March. All these winds are blowing. They're sweeping away the old. This is a month when spring's slow return. We're going to see it soon in the crocus, in the little white snowdrops, in the daffodils. It's this slow process of what is underneath, emerging from the ground. In the same way, I hope that you use this month for that kind of unearthing, that you can let this topic of feminine wisdom blow away some of the stuff that just doesn't serve us anymore. Just to look at your own story, your own life, and let that happen. We can allow what's buried in our unconscious to come up and then let it go. We can also take time to really marvel at the beauty of the season, the beauty of feminine wisdom. And I have learned, in part because of my shamanic bent, that the earth herself is feminine. Feminine energy. Things are coming up from her, helping us grow. And that the more grounded each one of us can be in the earth, the deeper our roots go, the more the feminine wisdom can flow from this deep knowing of the earth, from this interconnectedness of everything. That's feminine wisdom. Everything is interconnected. We also just have to keep understanding that things are changing. So I want to share with you what the shamans say. They say in this large scope of history, we are part of something changing. That we are moving. They see time as an hourglass, right? that we've been moving from this age of duality, where everything is either or, light or dark, into an age of unity. Now, they tell us it's going to take at least 500 years, and that we are here in the hourglass. We are where the pressure is on, so that something else, probably not our generation, but the next ones, can flow into unity from duality. Ugh, I know you feel it. I know you do. It's everywhere. Every discussion these days is around that pressure flowing into unity. So what can you do? Well, be aware of that, first of all, that we're part of this larger story. You can always never let a woman stand alone. Never, when a woman is speaking her truth, let her stand alone. Anyone, male or female, sharing feminine wisdom, don't let them stand alone. When I was leaving the church that very last Sunday, it was my last Sunday, I spent the whole Sunday in tears because I was so sad and people were greeting me. And after I was cleaning up the puddle at my feet from all of that, I had to go to my office, take that last stack of books, and leave forever. I didn't know it would be forever, but it was forever. So I'm getting ready to do that. And here into the office comes two women. They were my friends. I hadn't asked this of them, but they didn't say a word. As we picked up the last of my books, we walked out together. The interconnectedness. Never let someone stand alone. Men and women, we need to keep bringing others into an understanding of feminine wisdom, speaking up, standing up. Even if when you hear something that's distressing, you just say, excuse me? Even if you don't know how to defend it, just question it. Excuse me? You can be a little angry if you want. I sometimes am. Just let that intrinsic value that flows from feminine values flow out, show up, speak up, ask for stories. There are things you can read. I can recommend one of several books down here. Things you can read that can help to expand our understanding. And mostly what you want to do is explore your own mystery. Where do my perceptions come from? Where are my barriers? Where do I get hooked? What is it like for me when someone stands up here and says, let's talk about feminine wisdom? What does that do in you? And just to notice and grow, just like that first shaman I met said, this is what we're going to work on. First, heal your anima animus, your own duality. Let's bring it together. So the question we're asking for a whole month is, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life?